Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about a new book, Estes Method and EVPs, The Search for Ghostly Voices, with author Nicole Tito. Nicole Tito, a seasoned paranormal researcher with more than 20 years of field experience, has used various investigative techniques over the years. In her new book, Estes Method and EVPs, The Search for Ghostly Voices, she dives deep into explaining this method and how others can use it in their investigations. So what is the Estes Method? What are some tips for using it successfully? What about getting EVPs? And what are some of her favorite investigative tools to use? Nicole shares her knowledge of not only how to approach the investigation, but also how to review the evidence you'll collect. Whether you're a novice or a seasoned investigator, her insight can help others when they're on location. In this episode of The Grave Talks, we'll talk about the Estes Method and so much more, including listening to some audio she's collected with paranormal investigator and author Nicole Tito. Nicole, where did you in your life along the way become interested in the paranormal?
Yeah. So I would say, gosh, it started at a young age. I grew up on the south side of Chicago, lots of ghost stories. We have Resurrection Mary, and that my whole family's even buried. So we'd go there and visit our relatives, and I'd hear the stories. And just at a young age, and then as I got older, I started looking for paranormal groups and was lucky enough to be in Chicago, and I was able to join a group and start really getting into investigations and learning techniques and everything like that.
And how long have you done paranormal investigations then?
Yeah, I say formally it's been 20 years. But like I said, I loved hearing the stories. I'd go to the library and get all the paranormal books I could as a kid. So I'd say probably around the age of like 8 to 10, I started liking ghost stories. And then by the time I hit like 18 years old, I started really getting into like trying to do and go to places and learn how to use the equipment and things like that.
You know, I find that so interesting. I talk to so many people, all of us, you know, who are listening and me, we're obviously all interested in it. And it started somewhere, but a lot of people are like you and me. But I lived in a haunted house, but I became fascinated by it. And I read books, and I would go to the library, and the bookmobile would come, and I would get the books, and I would be like, this one, you know, some ghost story book.
And there wasn't that many. I mean, there were books, and there wasn't. Like, I feel like I was lucky to be in Chicago. I mean, we had a lot of great authors. You know, Dale Kazmierik wrote Windy City Ghosts, and I was able to be in his group, you know, and that's how I learned a lot from him. And then, like, Ursula Bleski, I always say her name wrong, she wrote books, so I was lucky enough that books available, but I feel like there wasn't as much as there is today. And there was some TV shows I remember watching, like Unsolved Mysteries, but there wasn't as many as now.
And I feel like it wasn't as accepted as it is now.
Correct.
You know, people, because I always felt like I was the kid who lived in the haunted house, you know, it's like, oh, Carol, we don't want to go to her house. But, you know, I just feel like now it's, you know, people are more fascinated by it and really interested by it. In your book, is this the first book that you've written, or do you have more books?
No, this is my first.
That's what I thought. So you literally wrote the book on the Estes Method and EVPs. It's The Search for Ghostly Voices. And this is a very interesting book. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're like, you know, I do want to do paranormal investigations. I don't know where to start. I don't really know what I need. This is really a great book for you to read. And if you have been doing paranormal investigations, this is really a great book for you to read. Either way, because I think sometimes people, especially who are new to it, they're a little intimidated by it. Maybe they don't really want to sound stupid and go, what is an EVP? What is a REM pod? This book explains everything for you, and it's so easy to read. So congratulations on it. It just came out recently. And that has to feel so good.
It does. Because I've had so many ideas. And I had written some parts of this, especially with like EVP, electronic voice phenomena, some of the techniques I wrote, you know, 10 years ago, kind of like when I was in the middle of like my ghost hunting like experience, I would say. So it was nice to get everything out on paper, and add a lot more information about like the Estes method, which is relatively newer in like, you know, quote unquote, like the ghost hunting world.
And that's an interesting method. And we have talked about it in a few other episodes, but today we're going to dive into it and what that really is. I think it sounds kind of terrifying to do it myself, but this takes more than one person. So I'm going to let you explain what exactly that is and why is it named the Estes method?
So it was coined and it started in 2016. So as I said, it's relatively new if you think about it, and called Estes because there were three individuals, Carl Pfeiffer, Connor Randall, and Michelle Tate. And they did this method at the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado. So that's why they called it Estes method. So they did it at the Stanley Hotel. And when you think about it, it's really a form of sensory deprivation. So, I mean, you cover your eyes. Usually you wear like a blindfold when you're doing this. Some people just close their eyes. It's up to your preference. And you listen using sound isolating headphones to a device that will create a white noise while others ask questions. So in the book, you know, I talk about, we use an SB7, Spirit Box 11, or Spirit Box 7. There's that Spirit Box 11, but, you know, Radio Shack Hack, any sort of device that will... can scan frequencies and make that like that white noise effect is what you should use. And I recommend using sound isolating headphones. You know, you plug it into the box. Some people say sound canceling, but I'm not claiming to be a technical expert by any means, but I always am a little bit worried if you're canceling out anything. Could you be potentially canceling out a voice or a noise that comes in? So that's why I use the sound isolating. And we talk about there's different kinds that you could use that are, you know, relatively reasonable in price. And so how it works is you have somebody that's wearing the headphones. We call them the receiver. And all their job is to just listen, and anything that comes over that they just repeat. So we say to kind of repeat it and how it comes over. So if it yells, yell it out. If you think it's relevant to say it's a man, a female, a child, you would say that too. And the other individuals who are asking questions, we call them the operators. They're just trying to see responses that they can get. So the person that's listening with the headphones cannot hear anything besides what's coming over their spirit box. So that's where it gets really intriguing. When you start having people respond to questions, or if you have multiple people having conversations that are listening to the headphones, and that has happened, where they're talking to each other and they can't hear anything.
You know, that's what kind of sounds terrifying to me, because being the receiver and being in a location that's known for paranormal activity, obviously a lot of people are braver than me, but to have your senses kind of knocked away.
Oh, yeah.
So you can do it with headphones, and then some people do it with blindfolds as well.
Correct.
But you don't have to have the blindfold.
No, but I think it just helps you immersed into it. So, I mean, I think because people have a tendency to open their eyes if they're not wearing the blindfolds.
Right.
I feel like you then maybe could be biased in a way. Like, you know, when you're in a location and you open your eyes and you see like two or three people from your team, maybe they're in like a certain room. And you're like, oh, you know, they're over in this room. Maybe something's going on over there. So that's why I try to take out the bias. If you close your eyes, you don't know what's going on. And we just recently started using, they're called like pixel goggles, and they can actually change colors. So we've been trying to use them like with the red effect, like the Hansfeld effect and things like that. But we've only used them once or twice just to see if like that'll help somebody get more deeper into like almost like a sort of meditation like state as well.
I was just going to ask you about that. Because of blocking off your senses like that, I think it would automatically put you in a different state.
I feel like
not,
it would.
Maybe not everybody.
Yeah.
But the people who are able to.
Yeah. I'm not great at meditation. I still get things. Now, my colleague that's a lot in the book that we do very well together, Lisa Crick, she's a bit more sensitive and she could kind of quickly get into that state, and she comes physically affected a lot of the times, which I talk about in the book. Well, she'll get emotional. She's cried before. She's had to like get up and pull herself out of the session because it was just too much for her. Like something was almost like attacking her.
Oh, so when you decide who's going to be who, is it pretty obvious to somebody who's doing the receiving? Do you look for someone who has a deeper ability to connect? You know, maybe somebody who picks up on energies or something mm-hmm. like that. You know, I'm going to guess not the scientific-minded person who's there to debunk, yeah, or does it work either way?
I think it works either way. I think just overall, you know, investigating all these years and just in general, you know, not just even with SCs, I think it's who you work with and you kind of start to develop off each other's energies. Like I work very well with Lisa doing the Estes method and EVP sessions. My husband, who's newer to ghost hunting, works very well with his friend, Jim Williams. So those two will work really well together when they do Estes. But if I go, like me and my husband are together, we don't like talk to each other. So I sometimes just think it's just a connection that you have with some childhood friends. I've known Lisa for, you know, close to 20 years now. So I think it's just sometimes who you click with. And that's hard to say who it's going to be. I think just from being on so many investigations, you gravitate towards people that investigate like you do, and you become comfortable. Like you have that sense of trust among each other.
That makes some sense. So when you and Lisa first started doing this method, where was the first place you attempted it? Do you remember?
Yeah, so we did it in 2019. And I remember Lisa brought it to us because Lisa is a little bit innovative sometimes with her methodology. And I was thinking, this isn't going to work. I'm like, okay, let's try it. I'm always a little bit more skeptical. And we did it in 2019 at Crown Point Jail, which is in Crown Point, Indiana. And that location we've been to so many times, great location. And we got results. Like me and her did it a couple times. And then my husband, Al, did it with his friend, Jim. And they got some good conversation back and forth. So I was pleasantly shocked that it worked so well on the first try, essentially.
So what kind of information did you get on that first one? Do you remember?
I'm trying to think because we've done it at a point a lot. We were getting, we always were asking kind of like, you know, what cell are you? What cell should we go to? And we did get like the number 7 quite a lot when, I have a clip that we could probably share later. That
did send me some good audio clips and we're going to play those.
Asking like, what cell are you in and things like that. And again, Lisa and I can't hear each other. And we both like in unison said 7. And again, here are the questions that were being asked. So we've gotten the number 7 of there a lot. And then I'm trying to think what else the first time we got a couple things saying, like, help me, and a couple conversations like here and there, but not, we got like the name of right now, like Carl came up and we're asking for names and things like that. But for the first time, I think it worked very well. We try to limit it. We don't do it for too long. So we kind of, it's like an EVP session for us as well. If things are kind of slow, we'll stop after maybe 10 minutes. If we're not getting a lot of response, or just a lot of random jumbled words. Sometimes we get a lot of words and that make no sense. And sometimes you just get silence.
When you're recording it, are you picking up both your voice and her voice? Are you picking up the spirit box at all as well?
So we started using a splitter. So most of the evidence I have now, it's just like the one-sided. So you'll hear the receiver, you'll hear the operators asking questions and you'll hear our responses, but you won't hear the box, like the spirit box. I did just get like a splitter. My hopes is to be able to capture everything. So that the questions and what's coming over the box.
That would be interesting.
Oh, yes. I feel like it could, you know, help really understand like what's coming through. Because I feel like when I say things, I'm hearing it correctly, but maybe it is something different. Maybe it wasn't the word I thought it was. So it'd be interesting to hear like all of it together. And that's something that like with the splitter, I really want to start doing more and more.
And it does seem too, like, depending on the location, I would think every investigation changes upon the location. And there's some that you walk in and it feels maybe a little happy and not too dark. And other places you walk in, it's like, oh, this is going to be a long night. It kind of seems like with this method, it is putting especially the receiver in kind of a vulnerable position.
Oh, I agree. That's why a lot of the times if we're going to be pulling somebody out, instead of somebody, we'll shine a flashlight at them. Hopefully it'll go through their blindfold, or we'll stomp the floor kind of next to them so we're not scaring them. But I will say as a receiver, there's sometimes I just want to just open my eyes and pull myself out. But, you know, to me, I'm like, something's going to happen. This is good. We will announce it. So the more and more that we have been doing it, if I feel something strange, I'll announce it. I'll say like, this is Nicole. Like, it feels really strange behind me, or I feel like somebody's in front of me. Just to let the operators know that, hey, something might be going on by pole. You know, sometimes it's just them moving, but sometimes they're like, oh, okay, what's going on? And they might pick up on things or at least move a piece of equipment over by me. Maybe we'll take like a millimeter or an EMF detector and see like, hey, is there something really going on? Or is it just Nicole's got the heebie-jeebies right now?
And is the Estes method becoming more, what's the word I want, more used?
I think it is. I see it more and more. I've seen it on, you know, the television shows. I've seen it on like YouTube. So I think people are using it more and more. I just haven't seen as much evidence out there. I mean, I'm just not looking at like the right channels, but I think it is since it's kind of been introduced back in 2016.
And don't you think too, with it putting together a team, having someone with different skill sets, like with Lisa, maybe she's more in tune in a different way than you are. Mm-hmm. And that kind of balances it out.
I think so. And I think it comes down to like the flow of the investigation. You know, it's just the energy you bring into it. Even if we go to like an old prison, I still like to be positive. I'll introduce myself. I'll thank the spirits when we leave. I don't like to provoke. That's my style. I think the energy that I bring into it is positive. People or spirits want to talk to me, they will. And if they don't, they don't. I think it's a lot of times how you approach the investigation and the energy that you bring. And yeah, like you said, the yin and the yang. Lisa's more sensitive than I am. We get things. My husband and his friend are a little bit more skeptic, which is good. And they still get things.
I've heard so many places that, you know, when I talk to people who own a building or maybe they are tour guides there or something, they'll talk about walking in and just feeling the different energy of the building and how it changes with the different people's energy. So if you go in and you're like, oh, this place is going to be a load of crap. I'm not going to get anything here.
Oh, yeah. And that's why even, you know, when we started off, I always try to do more private investigations, public investigations. You don't know the people coming in and, you know, their methodology or what they're going to do. So a few years ago, we did a public investigation because we only had a few people that were good, that were able to attend, so we couldn't rent it out entirely at Mansfield. So the Ohio State Dormitory in Ohio. And, you know, it's about 30 people there. There was four of us. We didn't know anybody else. It was completely dead. No pun intended. I had been there multiple times in the past on private investigations. Super active place. I think one of the most active places in the country. And my husband and his friend were like, this place is terrible. I'm like, no, it's never like this. And I really think it was because it was a like investigation. And like you don't know what people are bringing in, like mm-hmm. their mentality, their energy, their flow. Are they doing something they shouldn't? So the more and more I investigate, I really try to do private ones with people I know and trust, because I think we get more than just like a whole big public, which I know sometimes it's hard.
I could see that, because what you bring into it is going to affect that.
Agreed. I know if somebody came into like my place I was at and was very rude, I'd be like, okay, see ya.
Right?
I mean, they don't know how, I mean, I know we don't know how we're perceived and things like that, but I'd be like, all right, I'm leaving.
But we've all met those people in real life who are like, oh God, that person gives me a bad vibe. I don't like his attitude. I don't like, you know, the way he's condescending and mansplaining to me. You know, you immediately, maybe he's not meaning to mansplain, but that's how I took it. I think that that can happen in the other realm as well.
Agreed. Agreed.
So I do believe it's all in how you approach it. And so
that's when I tell people, find your, when you know, and I say team, I just use that loosely, find people that you work well with. And I think you'll be successful in whatever you do with ghost investigating and your style.
Have you pretty much worked with the same people all these 20 years? Have you gone through different groups? Kind of, I like this approach. Like, I don't like that approach over the years.
I feel like I've been with Lisa the most in about the 20 years. And there's been a few other people, my cousin Joey as well. And then like some newer people, like my husband Al, you know, when I met him and his friend, they've been about 10 years, give or take. So I feel like I've kind of been with the same people right now, all of them, for mostly 10 years or longer.
That's a long time.
Yeah. Which, yeah, when you think about it, it's a long time.
When you look back on when you first started, is there one kind of that thing I think we all have when we first start something new? It's like, well, I didn't know what I didn't know then. And you've kind of learned, like, maybe your approach to it was so different than it is now, or the equipment that you used. So when you look back at beginning paranormal investigator Nicole, are there some tips that you would give her?
Yes. And I'm sure probably a lot of you listening know of, you know, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She left us too early. She was a great mentor. So if you've heard of her, look her up. A lot of great books out there. Unfortunately, she passed away a few years ago. We were doing an investigation, and I don't even remember where it was years ago. And I remember like Lisa and I used to say, okay, if you want to manifest, you can use our energy. And she was like, no. Do not say that. She's like, you know, you're opening yourself up and you're inviting, you don't know what to like potentially like even possess you if you think about it. So that was one thing. I'm very careful in like what I say, and if I'm, you know, doing an EVP session, like I don't open up to anything that I don't want. So that's like my number one tip. Make sure you know what you're dealing with.
She was so right, because that's a really bad idea. You could you could have been bringing all kinds of stuff home.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I feel like a lot of people get attachment issues because they open themselves up or they don't close themselves down properly, or when they leave a location, it's easy. I shouldn't say easy, but things can potentially cling on.
So let's also talk about EVPs. Mm-hmm. Do you do the EVPs always? Do you do the Estes method always? Do you do a combination? Do you do a little of this, a little of that? Do you kind of wait and see what the location is like and see what you want to do once you get there?
Now I do a little bit of both. EVP stands for electronic voice phenomena. And that's usually, you know, you'll go into a particular area, ask a set of questions that maybe you have determined, or you just kind of determine on while you're in the environment. And then you listen to your recording afterwards. And if you get any voices or noises that you didn't hear in real time, that's an EVP. Sometimes you get a disembodied voice that we call it, but you hear that in real time. So you react to it. For me, it kind of depends on the location. For an EVP to be successful, a session, it should hit. So if you're in a location that has a lot of people, or you know it's going to be a lot of contamination, it might be difficult to do a session because you're going to be tagging everything, we call it. So if somebody's coughing or yelling in the background, you're going to be constantly saying that on your recorder. So I tend to do EVP sessions in a quieter place if there's not a lot of people, and in spurts. So usually 8 to 10 minutes in a location, especially if it doesn't feel active. Again, you might not know if you're getting anything because you don't hear it in real time. And then with Estes, I feel like you could do that. And still, if there's a lot of noise in the background, it won't fit as much because the receivers shouldn't be hearing that noise anyway. So, you know, it might be a little bit hard when you're listening to kind of know what's going on in the background, but you don't have to worry about noise contamination as much because you're not looking for EVPs per se.
And when you're thinking about what you want to ask a question in either one of those methods, mm-hmm. you know, I was talking to someone recently and he brought up a really good point. Like he said, if you're the ghost or the entity or whatever, the spirit, and mm-hmm. you've heard for the 100th time, what year did you die? You know, he said, they're like, oh my God, I've heard this. And he said, ask him something interesting. I thought that's really a good point. You know, maybe you might get some activity by approaching it slightly differently and try not to ask all the same questions other people might be asking. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point. And, you know, even just if you know you're in a location, they spoke different languages. I mean, I'm not well-versed in many languages, but I've had people think, oh, maybe we should ask something in German or Polish. It's like, yeah, you might get something if you know it has a history of a lot of different people, different languages. So I like that approach because, I mean, what's your name? You know, what year is it? We try to ask questions based off the environment too sometimes. So with the Estes, if we're getting stuff over the box, we'll try to kind of follow up on some of the responses we're getting. And one question that I haven't gotten a response yet, but I'd love to, it's like, I'll ask like, what do we look like? And I haven't gotten a response yet or an EVP yet about that. Cause I'm like, okay, how do they perceive us? Can they see us like we see each other? Do they see us as lights? Do they see us as something else? I don't know. Are we shadows?
If you ever get an answer to that, will you please email me and let me know? Because that would be fascinating. In fact, we'll just do a whole nother episode on that. Because that would be so interesting.
Yeah, I feel like we've been asking that for maybe close to 5-6 years. And we haven't gotten anything yet. You know, like, hey, what do we look, you know, can you see us? What do we look like?
That would be so fascinating. One of these days, keep trying.
Yeah, maybe.
Now, when you go in to do an EVP recording, what do you have a particular recorder that you think works best? Or would you even like just use your phone, put it on record? Or would you bring in some specific equipment?
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't have anything in a pinch, you can use your phone. Because phones, obviously, nowadays are great pieces of equipment. I just warn you, if you're running any sort of K2 meters, if they're close to the phone, it will set those off. It will set off some EMF detectors. So just know that if you're using your phone and it's not in airplane mode, it can make some of the devices go off. But as long as you know that, no big deal. I use the Olympus 420, it's called. It's just an audio recorder that you would buy for anything. It's not quote unquote ghost hunting equipment. And I would warn you, be careful. Like if you type in like ghost hunting equipment recorder, they're going to charge more money a lot of places. It's the same recorder. I've used a Sony audio recorder in the past. And nowadays, I feel like they range from anywhere from like, you can get like a really reasonable one with great quality audio for like $30. And then my Olympus one, gosh, I got years ago and it was like 90, but it's so clear, the audio, and it's great. And it's like unlimited. I forget how much audio it holds, but if you download it after every investigation, you won't have any issues with, you know, with it recording. I've left it overnight, you know, 12, 13 hours and no issues. So yeah, I mean, you could use your phone, you could use whatever you have, but you could get things pretty reasonable audio recorders if you look.
And in the book, you do a great job of going through different types of equipment that you could use, like motion detectors and REM pods and K2 meters and tri-field meters and all these things. And so I think it would be great for someone who's interested in it. You can read that and you can find out what each of those things do and make your own decision about what you want. But if you were just starting out, what would your go-to pieces of equipment be?
Ooh, so definitely my audio recorder. I say the Melmeter is another great one. It detects changes in the electromagnetic field, and it also has a temperature probe, so it could tell you instant changes in, you know, ambient air. So that's a really good one to have. It's not too pricey at all. And I like having like a REM pod. I know that's popular, it's newer, but I like the newer ones because they're louder, they give off a noise, they light up.
Could you explain what you're using the REM pod for?
Sure. So with the REM pod, it's like what it does is it detects a change in the electromagnetic field. So with the REM pod, it comes with like an antenna, and it's giving off a little bit of a field. So if anything changes that field or if anything directly touches like the antenna on the device, it'll sound off. It lights up and it gives an audible noise. And there's different levels, like, and I don't know all of them exactly, but like it'll give off like certain noises if it's like a higher like range than another. And I think that's a nice visual if you're recording, even with a camera, you can record that piece of equipment and it picks it up quite easily on your camera. It is a little bit pricier, so, you know, keep in mind if you want to buy multiple pieces of equipment, that one's a little bit pricier. I just like its functionality. And I'd say my other one, I really like, we have kind of like a modified SLS camera. So we use the Xbox Kinect, but we've made it portable thanks to my husband. And that's been really cool. So we walk around with it and it's able to detect like those stick figures on a camera. So if you're in a location, yeah, you could set it down. So the SLS camera runs a couple hundred dollars. So we used like an old Xbox Kinect, hooked it up to a tablet that we had, and we run it that way. So that contraption probably closer to maybe like $200 if you have some of that equipment. So that was a little bit more feasible for us, and it's portable, but it's really cool. If you're sitting there doing an EVP session, you could put it down and then you might have stick figures pop up. And so it's really interactive. It can be with the environment in real time in a location. And like I said, it's portable. I'm all about being portable and being able to get to like spot to spot easier instead of lugging around so much equipment.
Yeah, it can weigh you down. 'Cause you had something you said in the book and I jotted it down. It said, in the past, you spent so much time setting up equipment and using a number of different devices that you missed some paranormal occurrences. And so now you've moved back to a more simple approach. And mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting because I get it. It's like, if you've got all this equipment and you're monitoring equipment and you're very focused on your equipment, are you picking up on things that are happening?
Yeah, you might not be.
Yeah.
And a lot of the EVP that I feel, I haven't statistically, you know, done an analysis, but they happen in like the first 5 minutes of me turning on my audio recorder. So I think a lot of times when you first walk into a building, you're getting stuff. So you might want to like put your equipment down and like walk through and just start recording things. So you might be getting things. It's like that first impression.
It does seem like those first few minutes you're in a location might be the most important, you know, number one, your approach to how you entered and how, what your attitude is like and, you know, kind of who you are. But yeah, I would think that would be important because I would think if you're in a location with a lot of activity or even some activity, they'd be curious and they might come right off the bat and check you out. And I mean that in a respectful way. If you're so busy setting things up that you might be missing some activity that's happening, so maybe walk around first and record some things and then set up a few minutes later.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good time to introduce yourself. It's like that initial walkthrough, get that vibe and see maybe where you want to go first when you're investigating.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Nicole Tito about her new book, Estes Method and EVPs, The Search for Ghostly Voices, available on Amazon and other booksellers. In part two of our conversation, we'll listen to some audio clips from some of her investigations, including EVPs and recordings of the Estes Method, and a strange screeching sound that seems to follow them to various locations. For more information and to hear more audio evidence, visit her website, ghostly-voices.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, including everything commercial-free, become a Gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts and try it for 3 days free. You can go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there, also all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thanks for listening.